How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour two.
Hello, America. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. The phone number, should you wish to be on the program, 877-973-7425. Okay. We got to talk about a news story. It actually is a very big news story. It is not politics. I'll get at the bottom of this hour to the state of play of the campaign, all that good stuff, all the machinations going behind the scenes, but this is actually a big story. So here's my policy for advertisements, because it is related to this big story. Here's my policy for the live reads I do on this show, with very few exceptions over the years, very few exceptions. I like to have a relationship with all of the businesses I advertise for. So Omaha Steaks, I literally have been a customer there since I was in college in the 90s. First Liberty Building alone, I know the Frost family. I've known them for years. They were my original advertiser. They helped me get the show off the ground. Old Glory Bank. Literally my bank, been my bank for over a year, moved my bank account to them when they started, and now they advertise. Americans for Prosperity. I've been working with Americans for Prosperity since I was at Red State, well before I was in radio. So I like to have relationships. Listen, y'all can see me in the video. You've seen me in person. I'm not drinking Super Beets. One, I hate beets, and two, I'm not like Athletic Greens. Like that is disgusting stuff. I'm not drinking Super Beets, and I'm not drinking Athletic Greens, and I'm not going to advertise for them. Your miracle weight loss cure, I assure you, I'm working on losing weight. I changed my diet. It sucks. The amount of leafy green vegetables and the amount of protein that I got to eat, good grief. At least I got regular bowels, probably TMI for you. But nonetheless, I've been losing weight. It sucks because I got to start buying new pants too, but it works over time. Changing your diet, going to the gym, going to CrossFit, but no Super Beets for me. God bless my friends who do. I'm not going to, like, I can't credibly sell you that stuff because I don't have a relationship. I don't want them. In Atlanta, actually, I do an ad for a company called Frugal Kitchens, and they were actually at my house today measuring out for my countertops and stuff to make sure we're going to get our kitchen remodeled because we cook so much, and we've been wanting to do it, but I got a relationship with them. And so I say that to say you're never going to hear me. And I know people say never, but I have a real problem with the idea of me trying to sell you on sports betting apps and websites. And they have taken off. I want you to know, this isn't really to pat myself on the back, but you do need to know that they pay way more money than a lot of other advertisers to induce us to take them. And I am leaving money on the table with this show because I'm not going to do a sports betting app. I don't have a problem if you engage in sports betting, and this isn't me being preachy. This isn't theological. I am the only one of my friends who doesn't. When my friends come over on Sunday nights and we watch sports together, I am the only one not making parlays and bets and all that sort of stuff. I don't care. Most of my friends do. They're in their 30s and 40s. They have good jobs and they can do it. And I'm not actually opposed to the state of Georgia. They keep considering sports betting legislation. And many of my friends in politics get mad at me for saying this, and I'm got to hang on. Let me turn off my iMessage because I'm sure they're all going to text me when I say what I'm about to say. I don't care if the state passes sports betting. I actually think it makes sense given the number of lawbreakers you have in the state who are placing bets remotely, and you say, well, just because people break the law doesn't mean you should legalize something, look at speeding, blah, 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 blah. I don't have a problem with sports bets. I don't. I have a problem with me selling sports bets because it's not some behavior I wish to engage in. What I have a real problem with in sports betting, and why I might be turning my ship around on some legalization aspects of it, is it's predatory behavior against young men. I need to say this again. I gotta say this to you. If you want to bet on a game, you can come sit on my front porch, smoke a cigar, have a glass of bourbon, bet on a game. I don't care. I'm not going to preach at you. All of my friends do it. I go to Las Vegas. I don't bet on sports. I don't even play blackjack in Las Vegas. You know why I don't play blackjack? It's when I was a kid, I grew up playing the game 21 cards. It's the same game. But I also like to have a glass of bourbon or a beer while I'm in the casino, and I don't want to drink and do math at the same time. So I'm not playing blackjack. I'm not playing, but I don't know. I got poker chips at my house. I would actually like to play a round of poker, not for money, just to see how to play, because I don't even know how to play poker. I was gifted a set of poker chips, a very nice set of poker chips in a nice wooden box. I've never opened it. They're still in the plastic sleeve. I should probably throw it away by now. I don't know how to play poker. Now, and I've also got a terrible poker face. I mean, I am a terrible liar. That's why I try never to lie to you guys, because y'all would know, because I'm a terrible liar. I play craps. I just roll the dice, have a drink, roll the dice, have a drink, roll the dice, roll the dice. I have a crap strategy. I have twice lost all the money I took to Las Vegas playing craps. The overwhelming majority of the time, I come home with the exact same amount of money or more because of I play a very conservative game of craps. The dealers hate my guts because of it, but I enjoy it. I can sit at a table. I can be entertained, do some great crowd watching. I can roll the dice. That's the extent of my gambling. I never, and I will never play the slots. I know people who go play the slots. They're just eating your money and taking advantage of you. It's why the casinos give the best comps to people who sit at the slots all day, because they are bleeding you dry and they might feel a little guilty about it. Actually, it's not guilt. They want you coming back so they can bleed you dry some more. So they comp you the room because they know they're going to make way more off of you playing the slots. And there's something about older people with emphysema who sit in the chairs or roll up their jazzy scooters and sit there and push the buttons and play the slots and lose their retirement. But that's you. You're a grown person. It is your choice. And I know people like to go play the slots, because I go to Las Vegas and there are people always at the slots. And that is your choice. But I have a lot of growing qualms with the mass targeting of college-age boys, not men, to betting. And the predatory behavior, it's like the credit card predatory behavior from when I was a kid going to college, is now gambling apps targeting college kids. It's kind of remarkable. FanDuel, the website, has over 12 million players. The legal sports betting hit record revenue in 2023. Americans wagered $119.84 billion on sports bets in 2023, a 27.5% increase over the year before. That's massive. It translated to $10.92 billion in revenue in 2023, a 44.5% jump from the prior year in revenue. Legal sportsbooks finished 2023 on a high note, as the fourth quarter attracted wagers of $40.02 billion alone in the last 3 months of 2023, up 34.4% from the final period 2022. That includes bets on NFL and college football, Major League Baseball postseason, and the starts of the NBA and the NHL season. Revenue totaled $3.41 billion, up 30.8% from the prior year. When Evan Osment, a PhD student in psychology at the University of Albany, first began counseling undergraduates about HIV and substance abuse, he expected to hear about their health problems. Instead, He heard about their gambling problems. Since the beginning of the project 3 years ago, students have brought up unprompted gambling, Osmond said. We started asking about it in every appointment, and everyone has something to say. It's everywhere. The majority of the gambling takes place on mobile phones, Osmond says, largely, although not exclusively, on sports betting apps. Served up to students through ubiquitous ads that offer promises of free bets and easy wins, the apps sink their hooks deep into students, leading them to spend their financial aid money, lie to their parents, and ignore their studies so they can keep playing, he says. Students with low-income families are particularly vulnerable as they lack the financial safety net to bounce back from the losses. It almost feels like binge drinking or methamphetamines, where they're going on benders, Osmond says. They'll make bets and bets and bets and bets and then wonder, how the hell did I get here? The NBA is increasingly incorporating betting on the screen as you're watching the game. The NFL is promoting betting. All of the major sports teams and sports associations are doing ties with FanDuel or DraftKings or whatever. Y'all, we're headed to a very bad place, and I can see it coming. I don't have a problem if you individually are betting, but I think getting young men headed into college, exerting financial independence for the first time into that habit, is no different and no less predatory than shoving credit cards down their throats and in their faces when they get to college, telling them it's easy, it's quick, it's painless as a way to get income. We are headed to a very bad place. And I want you to notice as well, the problem is time and time again when these things happen, they're preying not on young women, they're preying on young men. It actually is a recurring pattern to have young men preyed upon these days in these sorts of vices. I got enough vices. Golf and bourbon. I'm going to Vegas. I got a meeting the first weekend. It's a big meeting the beginning of May in Las Vegas. I got to go be out there. And I'm going to take Philip with me, and I'm going to play craps. But I will have saved my money and not gone into debt to do so, and hope to bring home as much as I took, or maybe a little more. But I'm not going to, when I take my kids out there at the end of May for Memorial Day week for my daughter's graduation present, she wants to go shoot machine guns, we're going to shoot machine guns. And then we're going to take a helicopter, land in the Grand Canyon. My kids are not going to go on the casino floor because, one, they're too young, and two, it is not something I think that they need to be introduced to. I don't care if you do it. I can't emphasize that enough. This is not my moral objection to you being an adult and deciding to engage in gambling, but I have a real, real concern with us encouraging kids. I know a guy. He may be listening right now, and I'm sorry for telling your secrets. But he lets his 14-year-old have a DraftKings or FanDuel account one. He's got it set up in his name, but it's his kid, and he lets his kid use his money from odd jobs to do the best. So I'm like, man, you're setting your kid up to fail. Getting into that habit that early, it leads to bad results. And by the way, this isn't me. This is actual objective data showing these sorts of things lead to bad results. I will not do a live read endorsement deal of any kind of way, shape, or form for sports betting on this program. And it has cost me revenue. I could have made a lot more money, but I cannot bring myself to do it because I see where this heads in 10 years. It is highly addictive to young guys, and they get in that pattern, they get in that behavior. And you know what happens over time? They have a real hard time with wealth accumulation. I have a hard time with wealth accumulation because I spend my money on a lot of stuff, and I shouldn't, and we're doing better, and we're budgeting, and we're actually saving money. For a long time, I wasn't making a lot of money, and then I started making a lot of money. It's like, oh, I've been wanting this forever. Let me get it, and I'm in a position where I can pretty much buy what I want. I gotta curb that back, though, and save. And a lot of these guys, they never get to that habit, and we are depriving people of wealth accumulation. And here's the final point. We know long-term that people who actually focus on saving their money, they get married, they have stable jobs and families, and they engage in wealth accumulation, intergenerationally set themselves and their descendants up for success. And when we get young men into addictive habits like sports betting, when they're in college, we are depriving people of long-term accumulations of wealth. And not only that, we're setting a lot of guys out to need a massive socio-political cultural bailout in about 10 years. And I don't want to be a part of that. I'm willing to not take that revenue. And we should really be thinking as a society way more deliberately about our sports teams and sports associations and colleges and so many. And colleges are actually willfully doing it because they get paid to do it, pushing sports betting on vulnerable young men away from home for the first time. It's going to end badly for all of us. Hello there. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, Bob, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it. Hey, thank you for taking your position about the gambling, or at least thinking about it, because it's something that troubles me. I just don't think a state that has the welfare of its citizens at heart has any business encouraging people to gamble. Because when you're gambling like that, yeah, you may win one or two, but in the long term, you're betting against the house, and the house is going to win. And so you're effectively, I mean, in my opinion, you're throwing your money away. And I just don't think that's something we should, a state should be encouraging its citizens to do. And I'm including the Hope Scholarship in that. I mean, I just have on principle issues with that whole notion.
You know, I got to say, Bob, there have been efforts in the past to put a casino in Georgia. And the old mayor of Atlanta, Kasim Reed, used to say there's a reason Las Vegas is in a desert. And he's right about that. Every state, every single state, including my home state of Louisiana, that introduced casinos did so because they gave up and they wanted different forms of revenue. And in every single one of those situations, they promised the money would go to boost education, and the money never materializes to boost education. It's funny how that works. The states think that they can actually bet against the house and win. And even the states wind up losing to the casinos. I go to Las Vegas. I do. Gambling's not the main reason I go. I like the restaurants and the machine guns, but I still will play craps. But I go to Las Vegas. Casinos tend to be in places that have given up on trying to make other revenue work. And then they take advantage of their citizens and prey on people. I think the state shouldn't be inducing these sorts of behaviors in their citizens, for sure. All right, I got to move on. Raw politics when we come back. But first, I got to tell you about Swiss America. They want to help you protect your hard-earned assets. With all these banks, regional banks in particular, so the national bank's not doing as bad, but the regional banks having all sorts of problems. On top of that, you've got the government and corporations trying to get you to use plastic everywhere instead of using your hard-earned assets and fixed assets and accessible assets so they can kind of track your spending. Swiss America wants to teach you about the secret war on cash. They have a free report that you can get by calling or texting 800-289-2646. The Secret War on Cash report is free. All you have to do is mention my name, Eric Erickson. You call them and mention me, or you can text my name, Eric Erickson, to 800-289-2646 and get this report. It really is fascinating, this collusion between governments and businesses to try to control how you spend. So let Swiss America educate you, and so you can get around it, bypass it, and protect your hard-earned assets. 800-289-2646. 800-289-2646. Call or text my name. Message data rates may apply. Hello, America. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425 if you want to be on the program. All right. Put it off. So you want to know a dirty little secret? I'm trying to put off the raw political stories. And do you know why? Because I'm already tired of this election, and I suspect many of you are too. However, it's news, and this is a news talk program and not just a talk program, so I will avoid the temptation to discuss my exploits in sourdough, and instead, I will talk about the election now. I got a great gift from I joined the Broken Tea Society. If you know, you know. Boy, do they send some great swag, but I am a terrible golfer. I am unworthy of golf. Y'all, I'm bad. My buddy Kyle Morris is a golf instructor, trainer, coach, and he gives me lessons. And have you ever done lessons where you're like, clearly they're working because I'm better than I was. Like everybody's like, you're actually much better than you were. And it's like, I'll take a lesson. And it's been a while. I got to get up to Cartersville and get a lesson from him. But people are like, I'm like, I don't know that I understand exactly what you're telling me, but I'm going to try. But I need to play. I'm horrible and I like to play. All right, Raw Politics. Raw Politics. We'll get to Raw Politics. Now, Obama is beginning to believe Joe Biden's going to lose. In fact, this is the headline at the New York Times today. Alarm bells are going off. That's not the headline. The headline is Obama, fearing Biden lost to Trump, is on the phone to strategize. As the election approaches, President Biden is making regular calls to former President Barack Obama to catch up on the race or to talk about family. But Mr. Obama is making calls of its own to Jeff Zients, the White House chief of staff, and to top aides at the Biden campaign to strategize and relay advice. This level of engagement illustrates Mr. Obama's support for Mr. Biden, but also what one of his senior aides characterized as Mr. Obama's grave concern that Mr. Biden could lose to former President Donald J. Trump. The aide, who is not authorized to speak publicly, but said that Mr. Obama has always been worried about a Biden loss. And so the aide added he is prepared to eke it out alongside his former vice president in an election that could come down to slim margins in a handful of states. Perhaps for the first time, the two are on the same page about Mr. Biden's future. In a sign of things to come, they are to appear together with former President Bill Clinton at a major fundraiser for the Biden campaign at Radio City Music Hall in New York on Thursday. It was not always this way. In 2015, as Mr. Biden was grieving the loss of his eldest son, Beau, and contemplating running for the presidency, it was Mr. Obama who gently suggested it was not his time. In a memoir, Promise Me Dad, Mr. Biden wrote that Mr. Obama told him that if he could appoint anyone to be president for the next 8 years, it would be Mr. Biden. The vice president wrote that the mere possibility of a presidential campaign, which Beau wanted, gave us purpose and hope, a way to defy the fates. But after discussing the stakes with Mr. Obama, he took himself out of contention and stepped aside for Hillary Clinton, seen by the Obama White House as the far stronger candidate. The decision bred distrust and lasting resentment among some of Mr. Biden's aides. Several of them work at the White House today, and they believe Mr. Obama and his advisors sidelined Mr. Biden, whom they think could have changed the course of history and beaten Mr. Trump. Now, this goes on for some time. I'm not going to read it all to you, but it was important to read that context to you. The Democrats have a real problem, and if you're not on the inside, you don't really know the problem. Now, as you know, I'm not on the inside, but I know the people who are on the inside. Charlie sometimes says I have this Forrest Gump existence where I meet all these people and get to know them. And so I know some of the Democrats who are involved in this. And here's what you need to know. There is a real, as this New York Times article actually accurately captures it, real distrust between the Biden team and the Obama team. Biden and Obama get along well. But Donald Trump broke that relationship as well. It's remarkable the psychic break people had because of Donald Trump's election in 2016. The Democrats really, y'all, I can't emphasize this enough. The Democrats, a large number of them, particularly those in the current Biden White House and on his campaign, blame Barack Obama for Donald Trump. It is remarkable. It is pervasive. It's pervasive that Democrats genuinely blame Barack Obama. They don't blame Hillary Clinton. They blame Barack Obama. And the reason the Biden team blames Barack Obama is because they really, really believe had Joe Biden been the one to run in 2016, he would have won. That Hillary Clinton was so radioactive, that she was so vulnerable that there's no way she could win, except at the time they really believed she could. They liked her in 2016. She was history-defying. It's revisionist thought processes that led them to this point, but the Biden team, they've always blamed Obama. Since the moment Trump won, they said that blankety-blank so-and-so, it's him. Had he not pushed Joe out aside, we'd still have the White House. You have to understand that that is a core fundamental dynamic motivating and operating behind the scenes with Democrats right now. And now you got to know the second piece of this, because this is, pay attention here, this is as important as that first piece, because the two are joined together. The first is that Team Biden blames Barack Obama for Donald Trump and says, had that SOB not shoved Joe aside, we would have been spared Donald Trump. And two, the Democrats around Joe Biden's team don't trust Barack Obama's instincts politically. Never mind that he won twice. They look at Barack Obama and they see a man who won twice at the expense of everything. He lost the House. He lost the Senate. The Republicans, I mean, to put in perspective the Republican wave in 2010, you had to go back to 1894. Not making this up. To put into perspective the loss the Democrats suffered in 2010, you have to go all the way back to 1894. Did y'all know this? You can go back to 1894 to see the extent of a political party wipeout that deep, down to the lowest levels of local government. In 2010, the wipeout was so bad. People focus on the realignment in 1994 with Republicans taking back the House in 42 years, the Gingrich Revolution, the Republican Revolution. In 2010, Republicans picked up more city council seats, dog catcher seats, coroner seats, school board seats, county commission seats, state legislative seats, congressional seats. The Republicans, it was a massive, massive destruction of the Democratic Party, a complete finalization of realignment that started in 94. And so the Democrats on Joe Biden's team look at Barack Obama. They say your political instincts were selfish. They sucked except for you. And you decided for your legacy not to stand with your vice president, but to be responsible, the first black man in American history to be president, to elevate the first woman to be president of the United States, and it's your fault. Donald Trump won. So they don't want his advice right now. They don't want his advice. But the best they have if they don't take his advice is that Donald Trump loses on his own terms. The former president has already won the state once. That would be Michigan. And President Biden, who reclaimed it for the Democrats in 2020, is confronting vulnerabilities there as he seeks re-election. This is the Associated Press. Trump's campaign promises an aggressive play for Michigan as part of a robust swing state strategy. But at least for now, those promises are talk. The Trump campaign and its partners at the Republican National Committee haven't yet made significant general election investments in the state, according to the Michigan Republican Party Chairman Pete Hoekstra. The National Committee, he said, hasn't transferred any money to the state party to help bolster its operations headed into the general election. There are no specific programs in place to court voters of color, and there's no general election field staff in place. We got the skeleton right now, Hoekstra says. We're going to have to put more meat on it. It's much the same in presidential battleground states across the country, according to Republican operatives and party officials involved in campaign planning elsewhere. Widely praised for its professionalism and effectiveness throughout the primary phase of the 24 election, Trump's political operation has been slow to pivot toward the general election. In the weeks after executing a hostile takeover of the Republican Party's national political machinery, in fact, the former president's team has rolled back plans under previous leaders to add hundreds of staff and dozens of new minority outreach centers in key states without offering a clear alternative. Indeed, just 6 months before the first early votes are cast in the general election between Trump and Biden, Trump's Republican Party has little general election infrastructure to speak of. That is the Democrats' saving grace. You know, there's a big boost right now from the Morning Consult Bloomberg poll that Joe Biden's got some momentum. He's starting to go up in 6 of the 7 swing states. Nate Silver is tweeting. There's a lot of jumping the starting gun in terms of poll reading. In the macro view, both candidates are deeply unpopular. An election will be close. There's really not much value to add beyond that yet. Go enjoy the NCAA tournament, Major League Baseball opening day in the spring. I don't even start modeling until June. Even that might be too early in terms of where it's worth paying attention to daily poll swings for practical purposes. He's right. But even so, right now, in the polling averages, Donald Trump is still leading. And this actually begins to be a good indicator of where the race is going. To hold the lead that long, to be in that position, Donald Trump's got some advantages, but here are the disadvantages Donald Trump has. Money, money, and money. He can't build effective ground games in the swing states if he doesn't have the money. He can't build an effective get-out-the-vote campaign if he doesn't have the money. He can't build effective targeted ads if he doesn't have the money. Here's the problem you have to understand in real, practical, bottom-line terms for Trump. You may know when Election Day is, and you may be willing to vote for him, but there are not enough of you to get Donald Trump elected. He must also have independent voters who need guidance and prompting and encouragement to go vote, and that takes money, and there's not enough money right now. The Trump team needs that money. I'll tell you what the Democrats are going to do when that money starts coming in from super donors. The Democrats are going to say, oh, he's going to be beholden to the billionaires. He doesn't have any money. They're bailing him out. That's going to be their narrative. And you know what? People won't care, of course, because Biden himself does that. But it'll be a prevailing media narrative. This is going to be a close election. The margins will be narrow. The ground game must be built. And there's not enough money for the GOP to do it. And so they have to hope that people are so thoroughly aggravated with Joe Biden, they turn out for Trump without a lot of prompting. And they just might. They just might do it. But can you be sure they'll do it? That's the problem. The Biden team has all sorts of massive internal problems related to Biden, the economy, the world on fire, the chaos, all of that. But they have the money, they have the message, they have the means to be able to win a narrow election because they have the money to invest in a ground game. That sort of stuff is going to matter. The advantage is with Donald Trump right now, polling-wise. But the on-the-ground advantage is for Joe Biden. But the Democrats have a fundamental problem. That is, they're unwilling to take good advice from people like Barack Obama, not because they think it's bad advice, but because they don't like him, and they'll cut off their nose to spite their face because of it. Question is, will the Republicans be able to take advantage of it? Now, I got to tell you, I want to play you this clip. You know, Americans for Prosperity, they bought Bidenomics.com. Listen to this clip from Joe Biden.
Folks, you notice leading economists aren't making much fun of Bidenomics anymore.
Leading economists, that's the word I'm looking for. Sorry, I'm half Swedish. Are not making fun of Bidenomics anymore. Yes, they are. In fact, people have told Biden to stop using the word Bidenomics, and Americans for Prosperity went out and bought the website, Bidenomics.com, because no one otherwise, and again, this political malpractice from Biden's team, they refused to take advice from Obama, but they were not doing the things they need to do to win, like go buy Bidenomics.com. Americans for Prosperity did. They want you to go see it. Biden is wrapping himself in the label again. Remember, his pollsters told him to avoid the term, that it has negative connotations for the public. Doesn't matter. He said it again today, trying to defend Bidenomics, a pejorative he embraced as his own that's back to being a pejorative. Americans for Prosperity bought it. Go to Bidenomics.com. You can check out Joe Biden's real economic record. It's not as good as he says it is. In fact, it's pretty quite bad. Philip, if you can hear me through the wall, look at the video I just sent you on Instagram. Let me speaking of gambling and casinos and all that. So it's a video of a woman. She's at a slot machine and she's leaned over and like she's drunk and falls asleep and falls over and hits the floor. But this is the caption. This is actually an undercover officer working as a decoy, pretending to be drunk. These guys work long shifts doing this. And while she was doing the lean to pretend she was really drunk, she fell asleep and falls over. Her partner, who's filming with a hidden body cam, jokes with her, says, "Geez, what happened?" She jumps right up, no staggering, no confusion, gets back into position, and just tells him, "Whatever." Falls over, asleep. My goodness. Wow. Yep, they're trying to run stings on the guys at the casinos. Fellas, never do stuff like that. My goodness. Wow. But yeah, video. Okay. We got to move on to other stuff. Yeah, we're going to get into RFK when we come. I got to talk about that. Wild, wild stuff. All right. The phone number here, 877-973-7425. Yeah, no. RFK has picked his running mate, and it's like a spectacularly unaccomplished lawyer from San Francisco, and people are scratching their heads wondering, are you not running a serious campaign? Nicole Shanahan used to be married to Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin. She's a California attorney and 38 years old, runs a foundation focused on reproductive rights. That's not a serious pick.